the presentation can do so. So our videographer is stationed out there, and that's why we're all mic'd up. So welcome. Thank you so much for coming to our budget open house. My name is Marilyn Beard. I'm the Assistant City Manager, and this is Tracy Dunlap, our Director of Finance and Administration. We do have Mayor Lounger in the back and Deputy Mayor Joan McBride up here, and so they're here too, and we are here to listen. We also have a few staff here. Marie Steak will be helping us out tonight with our presentation, and she's our communications manager. So without further ado, we'll go ahead and get started with our presentation. How many of you received this document? Okay, good. At your home? Did you read it? Pretty much? What'd you think? Was it pretty informative? Good. This is our going to be our new format for City Update, just as an aside. We have been buying a one-page ad in the Kirkland Reporter for every month for some years, and we found that we could do this publication, a multi-page publication, get more in-depth on stories four times a year for about the same cost. So we will be offering it online, and we will be doing, we hope, three or four times a year, mailing this to your house, and so we hope that you find it informative. Our inaugural issue of the remade City Update was devoted to the budget, because that's a big issue for us this year. Before I was the Assistant City Manager, I was the Finance Director, and I've been here for about 20 years. And I have to say that this is one of the more serious, probably the most serious financial situation that I've seen the city in since I've been with the city. And so we really have, we're not the only city in this situation. We have a lot of company. The county certainly is in a very desperate financial straits. And so we have, unfortunately, some company in this. But we wanted to share with you a little bit tonight about how we got to where we are, why we have the financial situation that we have, what are some of the causes, what's driving it, and Tracy's going to do this, and talk about how we're going to approach the big picture for how we're going to approach balancing the budget, because after all, we do have to have a balanced budget. We're going to talk a little bit about how you can get involved. And most importantly tonight, we want to take your questions and comments. We want to hear from you so that we can pass that along to the City Council. Certainly not your only opportunity to do so, but we hope to talk with you a little bit and chat more than anything about what's on your mind, what you're concerned about, what questions you have, and what more information we need to provide to you. So with that, by way of context,
got it.
One moment, technical difficulties. Okay. Every 2 years we do a survey of Kirkland citizens, and what we found out and what is generally true is that people that live in Kirkland think it's a great place to live. They think that it's, they like the way it looks, they like the way it feels, they like the feel of the community, they like to live here. They think that public safety is their number one priority. This is not new. This is pretty consistent, but they do think that public safety is the most important service that we provide. By and large, people think they get a pretty good deal for their money, good value, they get good city services, and generally speaking, the city's focused on the right things. Again, by way of context, the city budget is the general fund, and that's the part of the budget that's tax-supported, and the part of the budget that provides most of the general services to you is tax-supported. The biggest piece of that is sales tax at about 28%. And as Tracy will explain to you, sales tax is not doing well. It's doing very poorly. And so we are quite dependent on sales tax as a source of revenue. So we have a loss of revenue on the revenue side. Property tax is only about 16% of our general fund budget, and it's restricted in how it can grow. On the other side, we do listen to you, as most cities do. Public safety is the most important service that is identified by citizens, and in fact, we over half of our general fund is devoted to public safety. And that's not unusual for cities. That's about most cities spend about half their general fund tax dollars on fire, police, courts, public safety services. Among those expenses, we're about people. Our organization and our services are about people. They're about the officers on the street, firefighters, people that are serving the community. And so most of our budget is made up of wages and benefits of the people that are there to serve you. So on the other side of the ledger, with inflation high, unusually high this year, we're getting hit on both sides. So now we find ourselves with a gap of at least originally said 13 million, it's growing bigger, maybe as close up to $17 million for the 2 year coming budget, 2009 and 2010. That situation has gotten worse a little bit as time has gone on and as the economy has continued to falter, and so we're having to face what was a large gap, about 12% of our general fund, which is a pretty big percentage of our general fund. Fundamentally, we cannot afford to provide the services that we're providing right now with the income, the revenue that we expect to have next year. So something's going to give. So to talk a little bit more about more specifically what's causing the problems and why we're having a revenue problem and why we're having an expenditure problem, I'm going to pass it off to the person who should know the best, our finance director, Tracy Dunlap.
Thank you. And the reason that we're having this issue is in some ways a perfect storm of events, both on the revenue side and then on the expenditure side. On the revenue side of things, property tax revenue is restricted in its growth by statute to 1% in revenues. And so that's been a problem facing the city for a long time, actually, since the initiative was passed several years ago, placing that property tax, which is one of the major sources of tax revenue, is limited in its growth, so it doesn't grow as fast as our expenditures. But as Marilyn indicated, the largest driving force behind the shortfall is what we're projecting as a shortfall in sales tax. It's also the reason for the big range, the 13 to 17 million, is sales tax is very volatile. It has gotten progressively worse as the year goes on, and what we're doing is to wait until we have the maximum data available to figure out what number we're going to pick in that range in terms of what our projected deficiency is. Sales tax is declining for a variety of reasons. One is the larger economic conditions, which I think at this point I need to go into in great detail, but all of the pressures on the larger economy tend to have consumers scaling back on their spending. But probably the largest contributor is that we have fewer large construction projects underway. The development has dropped way off from where it was previously. And that is one of the most volatile sources of revenue in the sales tax, but it's also one of the major sources. And so sales tax from new construction is down somewhere between 25 and 30%. In addition to that, we have two of our large sales tax producers who've made business decisions that are going to affect their sales tax payments to Kirkland. Costco is planning to open two new stores, one in Redmond and one in Bellevue, at the end of 2009. Costco's estimates are that will take about 33% of the same store sales from the Kirkland store. The good news is that tends to recover over time, but it takes a number of years. The bad news is 33% is a big hit in what we're anticipating to receive from Costco. And at the same time, one of our car dealers is intending to move their sales office outside the city limits, which will take with it the preponderance of the sales tax, because car sales is what generates sales tax in an auto dealer. And that's anticipated to happen sometime during 2009. So if you put all of those things together, particularly the general economic decline with those two events, we see a significant decrease in the sales tax revenues for 2009 and 2010. And on the other side of the ledger, on the expenditures, again, something that you're probably all very familiar with, the prices of commodities are up, fuel in particular, but building materials. We do a lot of maintenance and construction at the city, and so those things are driving costs. But probably the one of the largest impacts is that inflation, the consumer price index for June to June for Seattle, Tacoma, and Bremerton, came in at 6.19%, which is almost 2% higher than the expected figures, and 2% higher than it was as of April. And so all of those things put together are putting pressures on both sides of the equation, and that's why we have the gap. What did the council do in the past to prepare for this? A number of things. They didn't take all of the property tax increases that were available to them, especially several years ago. And at one time, the city had quite a bit of what we call banked property tax increases that you're allowed to take but you don't take. In 2006, the city used a large portion of that to increase public safety funding, to increase the level of service by adding police officers and firefighters. But there is still some of that bank property tax capacity left. It's a little over 1%. And so what I'll talk about in a moment in terms of the strategy to balance the budget is we're assuming that we'll use that banked property tax capacity in addition to the 1% we're allowed to take by statute as one of the building blocks of the solution. In addition, the City Council set aside reserves, and in some cases reserves very much targeted at the events we're seeing today. There's what is called a revenue stabilization reserve, which is intended to recognize fluctuations in revenue sources. It can't absorb all of the impact of all of these events in the revenues, but it is one part of the picture of balancing the budget. And those reserves are reasonably well funded at the moment because we had a number of good years. The city budgets conservatively, meaning that they don't shoot high for revenues, and they do try to be reasonably conservative. And I'll give you an example. We budget for all the positions that are authorized as though they're filled. There are always some vacancies in the city. But we make sure that we try to take into account all of the things that we know in terms of the revenue and expenditure patterns. And in the last several years, the city has implemented an economic development program to try to bring a more diverse base of business into the city and to increase the city's business base. And I think we see some of the fruits of that labor in some of the large office tenants that are coming into Kirkland, and that'll play a role in the strategy as I get a little bit further on. The challenge is that the City Council must adopt a balanced budget. The revenues have to equal the expenditures, and there are only a few tools available to the City Council to make that happen. You can reduce expenses, you can use reserves, and some of these reserves are for that very purpose, or you can raise revenues. And to balance this two-year budget, the budget we're developing is 2009 and 2010, we're planning on using a combination of all three. The strategy is to use expenditure reductions to close at least $6 million of that gap. It will probably be a little bit more because my guess is we'll be at the higher end of the range that Marilyn talked about earlier. We'll use reserves and one-time resources, and one-time resources in this case, my example of the vacant positions. There are always some vacant positions, so there's always a little bit of money, or generally a little bit of money from under expenditures at the end of the year, of about $2.3 million. And then about 40% or so of the deficiency would be closed with revenue increases. And unfortunately, right now, what I have is a fair amount of information on the revenue increases because we're developing the detail on the expenditure decreases as we speak. So I'm going to talk a little bit more about that. But right now, the strategy is the majority coming from expenditure reductions, a good use of reserves, and the remaining amount coming from revenues. So just to talk a moment about the expenditure reductions, we started our budget process in July, and we give direction to the departments on a number of issues. One of them was we usually would provide direction to the departments to assume a 2% increase in land labor costs, supplies, services, all of the things that aren't related to salaries and benefits. And at this point, we basically directed the departments to absorb those costs. And what that means is any cost that goes up with inflation, any license costs from a vendor, the departments had to look somewhere in their budget for a reduction to absorb those cost increases at the base level. So that's kind of an across-the-board reduction in that we're asking departments to absorb increases within the existing budget. And then we directed the departments to identify up to 8% in reductions to the budget. Now, that $13 to $17 million range doesn't necessitate 8% cuts today, but we wanted two things in asking for 8%. One is we wanted the city manager and the city council to have choices of how they approached taking those reductions. The other element is part of the strategy to balance the budget is a voted tax increase, with the vote occurring in 2009 for a tax to be effective in 2010. If that vote were to fail, we would need to make additional reductions. So this exercise helped identify, I guess I'd call it the universe of what we're looking at under the current economic conditions. We're reviewing those now. The way the process works, the city manager will put forward his recommended reductions as part of the preliminary budget, which will go to the council in mid-October. The use of reserves, again, we have a rainy day reserve, a part of it set aside specifically for variations in cyclical revenues. We're basically planning to use about $1 million of that revenue stabilization reserve, which is about half. And one reason we're only using half is there's a lot of uncertainty in the economy right now, and we don't want to use it all to balance the budget immediately because things could get worse before they get better. And we're also assuming that there will be some salary savings, one-time money that we can use to continue some programs that we've funded that way in the past. That means it's not an ongoing revenue source because what it is cash in the bank, but it provides us some ability to continue to fund some of the programs that we've been funding in that way in the past. So the next series of slides talk about the strategy of a selection of increases in taxes. I described a little bit what the bank property tax is, increases that the council didn't take in the past that were available to them. We're estimating that we'll take that remaining amount, which would generate about $145,000 per year, so $290,000 for the two-year period. And to give you a sense of how property tax fits into the picture, a home valued at $500,000, that's about a 50-cent per month increase in your property taxes. I think people are surprised to know that the city of Kirkland only gets 15% of the property taxes that are paid. The rest go to the state, the county, the port, and a number of other subsidiary districts, and the school district actually being one of the largest components. And so that's one of the first elements of the revenue side of the strategy. The city is allowed to charge a tax on its own utilities. The city provides four utility services: water, sewer, surface water, and garbage. They currently charge a 7.5% tax on those services, and the recommendation is to increase that tax by 3% to 10.5% on water, sewer, and garbage services, but not on surface water. Part of the logic there is that surface water is the one utility service where you have little to no control over the amount that you pay. It's based on single-family homes for residential. It's based on the impervious area or the paved areas of a commercial site. And so since you can have some influence on your water, sewer, and garbage bills, the increase is basically focused there. We estimate that would generate about $1.4 million over that two-year period. And the estimated impact on an average home is $3.25 a month. And the one thing I'll say, and I'll say this caveat a couple of times, I'm sure, your experience may vary based on your utility usage, the value of your home, all of those things. The $500,000 home that we used is about the average valuation in the city. And we looked at the average bill for a customer. There's a wide range of services that you can have. Garbage you can have from a very small can to a very large can. But for what we saw as an average bill, that was the estimated impact. The city has a business tax that it put in 2003 that has kind of a peculiar structure. It has an element that's based on the amount of revenue of the business, depending on if you make less than $2,000, less than $50,000, or less than $100,000 as a business. There are tiers. It also has tiers for the number of employees. So 1 through 5, 6 through 10, and so on, up to 100. And so the highest amount that any business could pay in the city of Kirkland is $2,600 per year. And that's if you had over 100 employees. And so what's happened is since that tax was put in place in 2003, it has stayed flat. Because any increase we've had in employment base was generally with large employers or with the hospital, which as a public agency is not subject to the tax. And so we haven't seen growth in those revenues. What we did is we looked at the variety of options available to the city. We could modify this structure. We could adopt a business and occupation tax, which is what Seattle and Bellevue have. Large revenue producers, very unpopular with the business community. Or we could look at a different structure of tax to replace the format that we have now. And the structure that we thought seemed to fit best was a fixed rate per full-time equivalent employee. And that basically recognizes that some businesses have both part-time and full-time workers, so you can create a number of equivalents. So if you have 100 part-time workers, that might be 50 full-time employees. It also scales with the size of business. Businesses that are growing, businesses that already have 100 or more employees, but are going to grow to 400 or 500, would pay increasingly more, and they'll be having more impact on the city's systems. And so at a structure that's similar to the city of Redmond structure, because that's the city closest by us that has a structure of this sort, at $90 per full-time equivalent would generate about $700,000 a year, or $1.4 million more than we're generating today. And so the impact on businesses will vary widely. Very large businesses will see a large increase, but not a large increase compared to their revenue base. Very small businesses under the structure would see almost no increase. The businesses in the middle, it varies by where you fall on these steps. There are kind of stair steps of the amount that you pay. And so we've been out talking to the business community. We've met with a number of individual businesses, met with the Chamber, met with the Kirkland Downtown Association, and are getting input on their thoughts about the structure and what their expectations are if this is put into place. So the last revenue element is the voted tax increase that I spoke of earlier. The state statute limits the amount that a city can charge on private utilities, which in this case are gas, electric, cable, and telecommunications, to 6% without a vote of the people. The proposal is to increase the tax on the private utilities by 1.5% to 7.5%. It's been done by a number of cities in the state in recent years. One reason this is an appealing way to try to balance the budget is, unlike property taxes, which are limited in their growth, utility taxes tend to grow with inflation, which is one of our ongoing struggles with the budget. It would produce $1.8 million for the biennium, but that's only 1 year. We're planning the vote to be in 2009 and the revenue in 2010. So it would be $1.8 million in 2010, and if that doesn't pass, that's the need for the additional reductions that we've identified to bring the budget into balance for 2010. This has the highest average impact of the options that we have as part of the strategy at about $5.90 per month, and that's based on a combined bill of about $392 a month. So you put all those little pieces together, and you get a combined impact of about $9.65 a month, which is a little less than $120 a year. It's about $115 per year. And again, it will vary, but that's the order of magnitude of what the effect of those revenue increases are. And the one that you'll be hearing a lot more about as 2009 approaches and is in progress is the 1.5% increase on the private tax. We haven't decided when we'll put it on the ballot. My guess is it'll likely be the primary of 2009. And we'll be getting more information out. If it doesn't pass, we'll be in this exercise again toward the latter half of next year. So looking into the future, how do we prevent it from happening again? The unfortunate thing is we really can't prevent it, but we can continue to be prepared. If we use reserves, we should replenish them. They should have the first call coming back in when revenues get better, so that next time things go awry, we have the reserves in place to help us deal with it. You may have seen in the paper but a number of cities have had to make immediate cuts with the downward trends in revenues in 2008. The city's been able to really take a look at how to approach balancing the budget because they do budget conservatively, and it's been that conservative budgeting that helps us really evaluate the best way to balance the budget. The next one is easy said, but not always easily done. Living within our means, meaning that we have ongoing revenues for ongoing needs. And I think the real issue is there are more ongoing service needs out there than we have revenues. We only have a limited array, and so we need to prioritize those services and make sure that before we add services, we know where the revenue is coming from, not just this budget year, but in the future budget years. And I think the last thing that we're talking about as part of this is to make sure we diversify the revenue base. That's why the business tax element of this is so important, because right now the business tax is less than 1% of our general fund revenues. And it is something that, if we are successful in economic development, could be a growing portion of the revenue base. So I think that's it for all the technical things. Are you tired? And you want Marilyn to talk again? Because it's more
interesting. I'll just say a couple words about how we're getting the word out. We are have our special issue of City Update. Far as I know, it's been well received. We do have a series of community meetings. We're going out to neighborhood meetings. If you have a meeting that you would like to host, or that a group that you think would like to listen to us or talk to us, the short version or whatever suits your needs, we'd be happy to come out and talk to you. Stay tuned to the website, the city's website. We will have not just the city update and links to all of the background materials about this budget, because after all, we've been working on it for some 6 months or so. You also will get updates via the website. Probably most importantly, coming up, you'll be seeing the proposed expenditure reductions, service level reductions that would be proposed. If you're interested, if you have a question, you want to provide a comment, we have an email box just for that. You can email the City Council at any time, but you can also send an email to the 0910 budget email box. And importantly, you want to stay in touch with the City Council meetings. On October 30th is our big kickoff meeting. I know that you're all not necessarily anxious to sit there for 4 hours at the meeting, but you can watch it live from home. You can tune in later through live streaming through our website. I would be watching those meetings, listening to what City Council has to say. There's a series of sessions coming up. And then there's a public hearing in November. And so if you have something that you want to share in face-to-face with the City Council, we invite you to the public hearing on the second Tuesday in November. So that's how we're sort of getting the word out and getting interest in it. You know, either we did a fabulous job on the City Update, which was what we'd like to think, or it is often difficult for us to get a lot of interest in the budget. It doesn't have as much appeal sometimes as, oh, I don't know, sidewalks or transit centers or something like that. And so it's difficult to get input from everybody in the community. So this is your chance. First, I guess I want to ask you if you have any specific questions about any of the materials that we covered tonight, or any questions in general.
Tracy, could you go back to the pie chart?
Yes.
I think what I'll do, if it's okay, I'll repeat your question as they come up so that we get it on the video.
Can't figure out the fast way. This one?
No.
Or the bar? Okay.
Well, actually, the prior one.
Was it?
Okay. Now, yeah, that's better. I'll
open
it and read it better from here. We see the salaries and wages and the benefits being 68.7%. And can you relate the, our safety, what do we call them, safety services?
Public safety.
Mm-hmm. How do their wages and benefits stack up with the rest of the city employees?
So the question, if I can, how do the wages and benefits of the public safety personnel, which is the largest part of our wage and benefit budget, stack up to those? When you say stack up,
yep. Is it the same ratio of salary and wages to benefits that we see here?
Roughly. I think we showed public safety being 56% of the expenses. I would say they're pretty close to that. They're between 55 and 60% of the salaries and benefits. They're a little higher than I think their percentage of the total budget, but they're in the range of 60% or thereabouts.
Right. They're probably the most heavily concentrated employees, the number of employees in the budget. There's a largest number of employees in those groups, and a large part of those budgets, by virtue of what they do, is wages and benefits, because it's people.
Now, are there the same escalator clauses in the contracted people, contracted uniform services, as there are in the, what I might call, the support side of the rest of the city?
We have four or five unions in the city. There's a police officers guild, firefighters, Teamsters, which are the field crews, and then AFSCME, which are the office workers, and then we have management folks who are not represented by a union. Those employees that are represented by unions are covered by collective bargaining agreements. They are contracts that we are bound to. They go on cycles, and so, for instance, right now we're in the middle of a cycle with both police and fire, and so their cost of living adjustments are locked into their contract, and they don't need to reopen that contract. We can ask them to and rethink that, but they don't have to, because they've secured that contract for the next couple years. They are also subject to interest arbitration, which means that your firefighters and your police can't go on strike. They can't walk off the job. But if we can't reach an agreement with them in the bargaining process, then it goes off to an arbitrator from the state, who will decide and tell us what it is that we need to pay them. And so that's the law in Washington, and that's the way it is. Both the AFSCME, the office workers, and the Teamsters, the field workers, their contracts are open. They expire at the end of this year, and so we are in negotiations with those groups for the coming couple of years. And so, generally speaking, cost of living adjustments are based on the CPI, Consumer Price Index. And the Consumer Price Index is what it is. It's, you know, that's, we don't get to decide which inflation measure we use. That's part of the contract. And so that's one of the things that's driving costs right now. And those have been already agreed to. We try to keep our labor groups at the average of the market, at least the average of the market, so that we can attract and retain qualified employees into our workforce. And that has been our policy, and it's been a good policy for us.
So I think, to summarize, the public safety unions are all closed at this point. Management is decided every year, and AFSCME and Teamsters. And so it's roughly half and half at the moment. It's about 60% closed, 40% open, a little bit less.
I don't want to dominate this conversation, but to understand more that the part of the community that we value most, let's say, police and fire, their escalators are about the same as the other represented employees of the city, CPI.
They're generally based on, all the contracts are generally based on CPI, but it's a matter of what we can negotiate with the bargaining units. And yes, they all generally grow at about the same rate, and based on the Consumer Price Index.
I think the differences that exist are in how we compare to the market. And I think that each one of those has been looked at separately. And I think I can say with reasonable certainty that the public safety ones tend to be closer to the top of the market, and I think that's how we differentiate ourselves when we negotiate those as well. CPI is a pretty common measure for all collective bargaining agreements in government, but I think there are other ways that the city's differentiated the various bargaining units as well.
Thank you.
Does that help?
Yep.
It was the long, complicated explanation to how do wages work in the city. Bob?
If I'm understanding correctly, about 12% deficit or gap, whatever, is the city contemplating any cuts in FTEs?
So is the city going to cut people or positions? I'd say it would be real hard to achieve that level of reductions without getting into positions. I don't want to say how many or which or anything like that because that would be premature. We, of course, want to protect services to the community. That's important to us and it's important to them. But because our budget is so heavily oriented towards people and services, it's kind of hard not to get into that arena.
Of the total employees that the city has, what number is actually, or what percentage is funded by one-time revenue sources?
I'm going to defer to the question was how many people, staff, are funded by one-time revenue. There's an answer to that, and then there's some direction we got about how to put this budget together that's important to consider.
Right. So the number of employees you'll see in the budget, which is about, I think in all 7-8 budgets, 465, are the ongoing employees. We have, at the beginning of this budget process, about 20 one-time funded positions in addition to the 465. Part of the budget direction was to either find a way to absorb the necessary positions within the budget, try to find a permanent funding source if we could, but to look very closely at those one-time positions because they don't have an ongoing revenue supporting them. And so I would expect that when we bring forward the recommendations, that will be different than it was going into this budget process.
So the idea was to either, if a department had a position that was funded with one-time, when I say one-time money, that's carried over cash from the previous year, it's not, you know, our basic income. A department could trade off and say, I think this is a really important service that we're providing, and I'd rather take this reduction in our department to pay for this person on an ongoing basis. And so what we're bringing forward is a budget that does not rely on one-time revenue to support ongoing services.
It's
not as much. It's really hard to do because there's an appetite for services out there and a demand for services and new things that we want to respond to. We're being very disciplined, I think, in our approach. We're trying to, and that was based on the City Council's direction.
Much of this problem that you're briefing us on are caused by external forces. Sales taxes being down, inflation going up, and a lot of that you can't control. Other people control it. But I would like to see a breakdown of why the city overextended their budget in the fact that the city is responsible for a share of the budget, and some of the city's actions could have caused part of the problem. You haven't delineated onto which part of that problem was caused by the city versus what by the state versus what by the county, because we got surface fees dictated by DOE, we got all kinds of external forces causing us to spend money. Well, a lot of that you don't have control over. But I would like to see a breakdown of what you do have control over. And expenditure on surface water programs, for instance, you have total control over, and you've overextended on that. And you've overextended on many other services. I would like to see staff break down where the causes for this shortfall was.
Okay. And that's a comment, a request. I don't think there was a question in there. Just for the benefit of the other folks in the audience, we have a surface water utility. And surface water utility pays for the storm drainage system, so the water that washes off of the streets and into the storm drains and into the lake. We are required to maintain the water quality in the lake, so we have to have certain systems in place in order to see that we don't have the wrong kinds of things going into the groundwater, going into the lake, and going into our watershed. And so we do have certain requirements that we do have to meet, and we do that by charging a surface water utility fee. It's included in your property tax, so you probably, most of you don't see it, because unless you get a property tax bill in the mail, I know I get mine from my bank, it's a mortgage statement, but you may not see it. It's, and I'm trying to think of how much it is a year, about $100 a year.
Yeah, or so. A little more than that. Actually, it's more than that.
A little bit more than that.
It's $15.75.
So 14, that's 15. What he's talking about. I won't debate whether we've overextended ourselves in that area or not, but the surface water utility is self-supporting, like the water, the sewer, garbage. The amount of money that we collect from the ratepayers has to support the services that we provide in that. So that's not really impacting the general fund. And the tax problem that we're having right now isn't really caused by the utilities. It's caused by tax revenue. And so your comment notwithstanding, just to clarify that that's outside of the general fund. Other questions and comments? So what do you think about this situation? What comments do you have for us?
I have another question. If I may.
Sure.
Regarding this one-time expenditures and it funds a lot of services that we need, you say looking to the future, what can the city do to change? And one of those things is to live within our means and no more one-time expenditures funding ongoing services, which makes sense. But on chart number or slide number, I believe it's 9, you said the city has been conservative, acting conservatively to date. And I was curious, how is, those don't seem to mix with me in my mind. Can you explain that to me, please?
So if the city budgets conservatively, how can we use one-time money to fund services?
Because it seems to me that that is a
contradictory
problem, because it's made a snowball of a bad economic macro system we have now.
I can't disagree with you to some extent. Those seem to be contrary to one another. I will say that, again, the demand for more services is always out there. When we say we budget conservatively, we are very careful about how we estimate our revenues. We budget our sales tax with a lag of 1 year so that we don't generally assume any growth, so that we don't get caught short. And we try not to get into the situation where we're having to make mid-year reductions in the middle of the year and disrupt the service system. And so we try to, just as you would, you have your living expenses, you have your mortgage, your groceries, your gas, whatever you have, and you have your wages, you have your income. And you try to keep those in balance so that if you got a check, you know, a gift of check for $1,000, you wouldn't necessarily buy a new house. But so we try to keep those in balance. When we do start new projects, often it's for pilot projects, for different new things that we want to try out. We want to see how they work. And I can say that one of the things that we know is that once you start a service, people like it. And it's really hard not to provide that anymore, because everything that we do because somebody wants it in the community. Every service that we provide has a fan base, if you will. And so we do hear from those people, and there is an interest in it. So I think it's trying to be responsive, but I do agree, and the council has agreed, that we have to get a grip on that and to start keeping our expenditures at a level that we can sustain over the long term.
I think that's going to be a discussion that's going to continue into 2009. One of the things the council asked for in the budget was an issue paper, which is part of the budget process, to talk about longer-term strategies to try to prevent taking advantage of the one-time revenues in a way that where you have a severe decline, and this is a pretty quick and severe decline. We were up in June of last year, almost 10% in sales tax revenues. We ended the year flat. Now we're down over 10%. That's a pretty rapid decline if you look at it historically. And I think it was a little bit at a time. It was a lot of the demands for service that Marilyn's describing added one pilot program and one piece at a time, coupled with the events changing more rapidly than we could predict to a great extent. And I think the thing that hurts us more than one might think is those events of our large sales tax producers, because those are things that have nothing to do directly with the economy. They have to do with their own business decisions, and that erodes the base. We try to put a lot of policies around managing peaks and valleys, but we usually assume the base is the base. And so taking a big chunk out of the base has really made this much more challenging, I think, than it might have been otherwise.
And I do think Bob brought up a good point, and that is that over the last, say, 10 years or so, there are things that have happened that have been somewhat out of our control. Certainly requirements from the state, from the county, from anybody else, the federal government, regulations and things that we're required to implement, voter initiatives that took out large parts of our revenue base early on, $30 tabs, Initiative 747, those sorts of limitations, took some revenue right out of our base and then put a cap on how it could grow. And so all of the normal increases in costs that we all feel are things that weren't our revenue, our wages, the city's wages, revenues aren't being allowed to grow at that same rate. So cumulatively over time, that's been a very, very difficult problem to overcome. And this isn't the first year we've had a budget problem. We've been trying to, keep our budget within balanced. For a number of years, we have the same sort of issue, and so it's been kind of a long term. It's just everything hit, everything bad hit at once this year.
Yes. Seeking a little context here in a two-part question, I guess maybe for Ms. Dunlap. How does Kirkland compare at this moment in this projected budget deficit to other cities in the region, and specifically the East Side? And the other part of that question would be, how does the, and this relates to the labor conversation you were having earlier, how does the city's wage structure compare to other cities?
That's a big question.
No,
that's okay. How we compare to other cities, I think Kirkland recognized that they were going to have a problem earlier than other cities. We started talking about it in March in some serious ways. Partially because we're so sales tax dependent, I think we started to see the decline earlier than some. And now, as I talk to my peers, a number of other cities are having struggles. Some are having issues in 2008. There have been some articles on services having to be curtailed at some of the cities on the east side just to balance the 08 expenditures. But in terms of the overall decline, I think for sales tax heavy jurisdictions that are smaller, we're probably about where others are. I hear 10-12% declines, and that's what we're experiencing. For, I'll call it an anomaly, Bellevue, they have a very large sales tax base. Not to say they're unaffected, but their construction seems to continue at the moment without the same kind of decline. I think one of the things that we're seeing that other smaller cities are seeing is this drop-off in development, particularly residential. The residential development has almost stopped in the city of Kirkland from its prior levels. So I'd say we're a little worse off than some. I think part of that is because of our sales tax dependency, and part of it is because of these unforeseen one-time events for our major producers. I think that I hear of very few cities who aren't struggling with this. I know there have been cities who have been talking about layoffs in the East Side area, but I'd say that we're probably in the middle, maybe a little bit on the worse side of things than average. In terms of our collective bargaining agreements, one of the things that is key to the way the collective bargaining agreements are structured is they're based on comparative cities. So we have 10 cities that we consider our comparables. We compare all of those cities in setting the wage rates. And so what you will find is that they are pretty comparable. And most of those are East Side cities or cities that are similar to us in demographics. And so we're pretty comparable to the other agencies. Seattle right now is the anomaly. They just announced a very large increase.
They did. Seattle is not one of our comparable
cities. But it's not one of our comparable
cities.
Good point.
Because it's just an order of magnitude. They're just not comparable to Kirkland. So we look at cities like Redmond, Renton, Bellevue, cities that are more like us. Yes, ma'am.
This is a simple question. Is there any way that Kirkland can create incentives to increase retail businesses to establish themselves in Kirkland? I mean, are there some kind of incentives that could bring them in? We need them.
Mm-hmm. Yes. The question is there ways that we can provide incentives for new retail businesses to locate in Kirkland? And that's a lot of what our economic development program is about. It's not economic development. It is about bringing financial health to our economic base. And you do that by bringing jobs. That's one way. And another way is by bringing tax revenue to support basic services. We are on the, we work that, our economic development manager works that on a regular basis. We are on the verge, we hope, of redeveloping, having the Totem Lake Mall redeveloped, which is one of our prime retail spots in Kirkland. We're not in the city's not in the retail development business, and so we rely on private developers to do that. That project has been on the books for a few years now. We have provided, we did provide incentives by paying for a portion of the, agreeing to pay for a portion of the streets and public improvements that were needed for that mall in order for that mall to redevelop. And so those are the kinds of things that we're doing. We do have a development agreement out there with those folks to make sure that that mall redevelops. Now, that being said, it is more than frustrating for us that the project hasn't gone forward more quickly. And now with the economy the way it is, you know, we don't know, things kind of shut down. So part of it is matching up businesses with the kind of spaces they need, creating spaces that retail can go into, deciding where the retail is going to be in our community, and that's part of our planning process and our economic development process, is where does the retail need to be concentrated. And so that's all part of what we do. We try to do that. Yes, do you have a follow-up question?
It's sort of different. As the city council endorsed ST2, which will increase sales tax by 0.5%. Mm-hmm. You're probably going to get a lot more people who are going to be very frustrated with having to pay more sales tax. And, you know, they're going to be a little upset putting out more money. And so you're going to be faced with that.
So there's a concern that we're going to be competing with other tax increases that are being mm-hmm. proposed this November. That's a real, yes, you're right, that's real. And you know, it's a different use of the money, but it's taxes all the same, and it's government all the same. And for many people, they see government as sort of one big thing. Right, right. So people don't delineate, and that's just sort of the way it is. You're right.
That's one of the interesting things about the sales tax is Kirkland gets less than 10%, which, again, I don't think is apparent to people, just like on the property tax. It's getting to be less all the time because the sales tax rate's been going up for larger regional needs, not because Kirkland has any flexibility there.
Mark, do you have a question?
A question, if you can't do this right now, I understand, but when I heard about the 20 one-time funded employees, I was trying to, in my own mind, do the math of if you did something and said, okay, all 20 employees go away, what impact does that have on the expenses? And if you know the answer, I'd be curious. If you don't know now, maybe you could let me know later. And I sort of did what's a loaded cost of an employee.
Right. I know the answer, more or less.
Okay.
You want to repeat the question?
Oh, yes. The question was if all of the approximately 20 one-time funded positions were to go away, what would that impact be? It's about $2
million. That was the number I was going to get.
Right.
I figured $100,000
right.
loaded kind of
Right, right. $2 million a year.
So even though my point was, I think, just to make sure that I was understanding, even though that sounds like a large number of employees, with respect to the gap that exists,
it's only one of several aspects. Yes, that's true. I think the comment was that the reason to size that is to see how much that contributes to the gap overall, and what you see is, while it's a noticeable component, it's not the driving force. Right.
When will the supplemental budget be published? Will it be ready for the first hearing, the first study session?
Yes.
Or will it be the second study session?
The supplemental budgets.
You mean the preliminary budget?
The wish list that everybody hangs in order
on. Oh, the service packages. Just to clarify, the question is, when is the supplemental budget going to be ready? And those are requests for new money, basically, that go with the budget. It all comes out at the same time, and so it will, about mid-October is when we'll publish the budget, and that will be all. It'll be the basic budget. It'll be
the reductions,
and it'll be increases. But the increases, what I think you'll see, have.
There are fewer of them.
There are fewer of them, and they all have their own money that go with them. So there's a pretty limited list this year.
At the same time?
Yes, it'll all be the same.
The preliminary budget document will come out a little more than a week prior to the October 30th meeting.
Right. That's their first. The first study session and the public hearing is second Tuesday in November.
In November.
Yes?
Another question. Tax burden study that was performed earlier this year, how much did that inform the coming changes that are going to be needed in the budget, or how much is that informing that process? And
I think part of the incentive in doing it was done last, when the original business license fee was put in place, so to see, had it balanced the burdens? And how had the burdens changed in the 8 years since that had been done? So I think it did inform a little bit the elements of the strategy, particularly the business tax element of the strategy. Interestingly, it will be coming back to the council at their October 21st meeting to look at before and after, given the strategy that we have put forward. Here's how it looks before, here's how it looks after it's been presented. So I think it may inform the decision-making more as we go on, but I think part of it was done to support or not the strategy that was being contemplated.
Forgive me, just to follow up, it was my impression that the tax burden showed comparisons from city to city to city, a peer group, and Kirkland was one of the few, if not the only, that had a different ratio than the other cities, or a different balance. Residential was supporting more of the burden than businesses. Is that correct?
To a degree. I think one thing that, and not to go into the detail of the tax burden study, but taxes on both businesses and residential have gone up. I mean, I think that's the one thing. I'd say that the burden has gone up more on residential than it's gone up on business, but it has gone up on both. And so I don't want it to seem like it hasn't, because you need to acknowledge it, I think, across the board. I think what happens is, given the structure of the taxes, more of the increase has been felt by the residential side. As I said, the business taxes remained flat. Property tax, the valuations of residential have gone up much more rapidly than commercial. And so while we had shifted it a little, it's shifted back since the last tax burden study.
Now, the Kirkland's tax base is fundamentally different than, say, Redmond's or Bellevue, and so that's partly a factor of what our community looks like. We are densely residential. We have only a couple pockets of retail. We don't have a Bellevue Square. We're not going to have a Bellevue Square, so we're not ever going to be Redmond or Bellevue or Renton, for that matter. So we have to work with the tax base that we have and the land use that we have, and so those ratios are going to be different. just based on the difference in the community makeup and, you know, how what Kirkland looks like compared to any other of the cities.
One last one. Is Kirkland more similar to Mercer Island or to Redland?
No, it's not more similar to Mercer Island because Mercer Island is heavily property tax dependent. So I would say if those are my two choices, the question was, is Kirkland more similar to Mercer Island than Redmond? I would say we're more similar to Redmond, but there's one really big difference, and it's a big company that's located in Redmond.
That pays a lot of business
tax. That pays a lot of tax.
Yes?
Tracy, you said that the 1.5% planned private utility tax increase would be put on, likely be put on the, for election during the primary of 2009. Why the primary?
Well, the council hasn't decided yet where to put it because we have a number of options. There are special elections earlier in the year, the primary. I think one is to give us time to react either way. If it's unsuccessful, we have some time to determine what we're going to do to balance the budget in 2010. If it's successful, we can take a look at how it's going to be implemented. We're going to present the council with all of the options. There are four special election dates during the first half of the year, the primary and the general in the second half. The lowest cost option is the primary or the general election. I think there are lots of considerations that go into it, and actually we had a little paper where we talked about that for the council a bit. How many other things do you want to compete with on the ballot? I think the lady's comment earlier about the sales tax items, do you want to be one of many or do you want to be one of few items on the ballot? And I think those are all things the council's going to weigh in picking the date, because that's one thing, we don't have to actually pick the date for several months, and so I think we'll see how things develop as well. But I think that part of it was, you know, the November election, basically the budget's done, the mid-year or the mid-biennium budget would be done by that point, so we'd be scrambling to readopt the budget under a lower tax rate because we're going to plan on it passing at the moment, where if we knew in August we could regroup if it was not successful. That's one of the considerations.
Yeah, maybe I misunderstood when you mentioned that the city departments are planning for 8% cuts. One of the reasons I thought, or potential, I'm just right. giving you numbers, I thought you said one of the reasons was in case right. that didn't pass.
We're not taking all 8%. We will have to if it doesn't pass.
So whatever
yes.
cuts in services we would have during this next year, if that failed to pass the voters,
the cuts will be larger.
Another round of cuts, but they would already be figured out in this.
Well, at least the candidates would be already have been identified. So let me just summarize that if everybody didn't hear it. The question was, if you're asking for 8% in cuts, how would that affect things if you're assuming that the voted tax will pass, which is what we're assuming in the budget? And my response is that we're not taking all 8% in cuts. Those that we don't take, we're holding off to be the starting list for the discussion if the vote is if the vote fails, essentially. So what we're trying to do is not go through this exercise, which is painful, more than we have to. And so in looking at the universe, it gives us choices for 2009 because we don't need to go all the way to 8%, but it also gives us a starting point for 2010 if the vote is not successful.
There one other comment there, and that is that one of the other pieces of direction that the City Council provided to us when we set out to do the budget was that they didn't want to do across-the-board cuts, which means all of the departments take the same percentage, that you know everybody would identify 4% and take 4% as if all services were created equal. They stressed the importance of public safety, basic. We have some services that are mandatory that we have to provide, and so they wanted us to take a real strategic look at the reductions in services, and so that's another reason why we asked for a larger amount, because we knew that if some departments had to take 2%, others were going to have to take 6% to get, you know, to get to where we needed to be. So it's not the cuts are not being applied across the board evenly.
Is this process already a done deal, or is it still up for changes in ratios and percentages and all of that? Or is this communication just to get input, or is it actually, would, if everyone screamed bloody murder about raising taxes, would you consider not raising taxes?
I think the, as in every budget process, it's not over till the city council adopts a budget. The city council hasn't received a budget. They have tentatively approved a general strategy that, that has the elements that we talked about. The city council hasn't seen how we're going to make the expenditure reductions, what services we're going to cut. So in all fairness to the council, certainly, you know, when they what they will get will be the city manager's proposed budget package. It includes a lot of adjustments, expenditure reductions, revenue increases, basically in keeping with the overall strategy that the city council said to go forward with. Once the budget is not balanced as of today, I will tell you that we are working on that. We're spending a lot of time, our staff, the city manager, the finance staff, and myself are spending a lot of, not what I'd call quality time, but a lot of time working over until we get to a balanced budget. That will be presented to the city council, and then it's the city council's prerogative to make whatever changes they want to make. At the point that the budget is published, I expect that they're going to start to hear from folks. We have not heard a lot so far, you know, from the city update. So, you know, for whatever reason, again, it's hard to get people real interested and involved in the budget process for whatever reason. But once that budget is published, then we would expect that we would hear from constituents by emails, by letters, by coming to the public hearings, and then the city council will take that into consideration. They always change the budget. They do something to the budget. It's, you know, they always make changes, and that's quite often in response to what they hear from the public.
One last question. The it appears that the public safety employees are a high priority for both citizens of Kirkland and city in these calculations. You mentioned a council member talking about not using across-the-board cut, but I think he said a scalpel, or maybe I'm just getting the debate, presidential debate mixed up. But in any case, I think the same council member also said that there were certain items that he wanted to take or look at possibly taking off the table, as well as legal obligations that forced you to, you couldn't cut certain programs like the water runoff and ensuring water quality. If public safety is such a high priority, why is the city still keeping it on the table for cuts?
That's more than one question. So let me see if I can get this right. The city council, and you were saying that one city council person said that not to take across the board cuts. In fact, we checked that out with the entire council. We said, how do you want us to approach this? And to a person, they said, no, we don't want you to just take, you know, kind of equal cut to everybody. That's not how we want you to do it. We want you to go in and to look at the services that we have and to consider the community's priorities, our priorities, and what we're mandated to do and so forth. And that's what we've done.
Or that's what we're doing.
That's what we're doing. We're doing as we speak.
As we speak.
Because public safety is such a large part of our budget, it's hard not to go to those departments and try to find some things to reduce, because it's such a large proportion of the general fund. If we took that amount of a reduction out of the non-public safety departments, it would be probably more draconian, more serious than people realize to take that amount of money. Now, that being said, you know, we have heard what the city council has to say. We are listening to what the community has to say. And, you know, basic fundamental systems we need to have in place. That doesn't mean that you can take no reductions from certain areas. There's always something to be there. And I think all the departments are stepping to the plate. They're trying to do their part. We work as a team here. It's not one department against another. And we all support one another. And I think all of the departments are stepping to the plate, trying to do their part. And I think there's a lot to be said for that.
May I follow that up just real briefly?
Sure, Kendall.
An interview.
Does that include, when you say basic elements, does that include response times of public safety or fire or police calls?
You're probably referring, that is the one comment that one of the council members made, and this person was very concerned about response times. And so we are certainly cognizant of that and listening to that.
Is that a basic element?
So if you're trying to get me to tell you something about the reductions that are coming out that are not ready to be discussed yet, we're not going to do it because that would be premature. And again, I will say that we listened to the direction we got from the city council. We listened to the community. We know what we have to do, and we're trying to put together the best budget that we can that respects all of those and still balance the budget.
Did you hear from any of those entities you just mentioned, the public and the city council, that it would be acceptable to lower response times?
We have not heard that. No, nobody called up and said no. And it's not likely to, frankly. And so, again, we have a community survey. We know what that says. We know that public safety is important. It's always been important. It's always been our number one service. And so, that's important. There's a lot of different things that are provided by the public safety departments. All right, any of you in the back? So, it is frustrated. You mean in the budget process?
Yes.
Am I frustrated with it? I will say it is extremely difficult. It is
very difficult.
Really, really hard. This is the hardest budget I've ever done here, and.
And it's going to be difficult in all forums. The departments struggled, mightily to give us the information. This part of the process has been a struggle. I think the city council, it will be difficult. And so I think it's frustrating to know that we need to be at an end, and there's nothing easy we can do to get there. And so it's just going to be a long, difficult process, and it's going to require a lot of attention by a lot of people, I think, to bring it to a successful conclusion. But I think we would like nothing better than not to have this problem. No one would be happier if Totem Lake started redeveloping tomorrow or our general economic problems were to go away than we would, because this is not an easy thing to keep track of. The parts move incredibly every day. I read more news today than I probably ever read, because day to day things are changing. Interest rates have a bearing on what we do, all of the things that are being talked about, and they have a bearing on the level of activity, economic activity in the city. And so the thing is, it's not going to settle until it's done, and even then things are going to continue to change. So I think that's, if I were to answer as the finance director, the frustrating part is, even when we're done, we'll be in the same mode of looking at it, trying to assess where we are and what we have to do next, good or bad, because it's highly volatile. I mean, it really changes constantly.
And things will keep changing. Things will keep happening. I guess our high level of frustration is going to transfer off of us onto the city council pretty quickly here, as soon as we publish our budget. And so we will have done our job to put together a balanced budget for the city council to consider. That's what our job is supposed to be as staff. Council Member Sternoff joined us in the back of the room, and he has either a comment or a question.
Yeah, just a comment. We are not alone. Every regional meeting I go to, including one today with Ron Sims about jails. As I was leaving the room, we were talking about what happened to the stock market and the bailout and all. And of course, King County has got a major problem, you know, lay off deputies and do all sorts of things. But even things they didn't have control over, like the Boeing strike, is already starting to show up in their sales tax receipts. They know it. So we're not alone. It doesn't make us feel any better. But it, just to let you know, it's not, you know, it's not just us. Yeah, they got cranes up, but they got big expenses too. But other cities like us that are struggling. And it's tough. I'm not looking forward to. It's never fun to read a document that thick, and it's really not fun. We've got to make some major decisions. I understand the public safety side, but you're public safety.
To summarize that comment, we are not alone. Any other comments? Anything that you want to pass along to the City Council if, you know, there's one thing that you want them to keep in mind when they enter their budget discussions, what would it be? What is the one thing that you would want them to think of?
Oh.
You've heard it before, but I'm going to repeat myself. Cost of living increases for the fixed income people has been based on a national COLA, questionable 3.4 versus 3.9, whatever they want to settle on. That's what these people, that's the money that the people will have to absorb their costs in whatever you generate. And I want the council to realize that the city is full of citizens, and their income has to have the ability to pay for whatever you ask for. 3.4 to 3.9% is what I'm asking you to stick with or lower.
So whatever, in particular, whatever tax increases that we propose or that the City Council passes, you want to be sure that they're taking into consideration your ability to pay those, particularly those with fixed incomes. Okay. What else? That's it? That's all you have to say to the City Council?
I would like them to be acutely aware of the situation that we're all going through now with higher, you know, we've got increases in our property taxes because our valuations go up. Sales value, if you want to sell, goes down, and say, you know, it's a bad market for that if you own a home. If you have any kind of interest rates, that's a situation hitting us. We've got gas, we've got everything, food costs, everything's going up. Now, we can't, as citizens, go to our boss and say, I've got a lot of expenses, give me a raise. You know, like the city is asking us if they come to us with a tax increase. And so I'd like them to look at it from that perspective.
Okay, so make sure that we are in considering your situation and the things that are impacting us are also impacting you. And so be careful about what we're asking for you to pay for because you don't have the ability to increase your revenue. Right. Thanks. What else? That's it? Okay. Well, I'm going to thank you for coming. Appreciate the time that you took to come and talk with us. Again, it's kind of hard to get people to come to these meetings, and so I'm really appreciative of the time that you spent here with us tonight. And I would say stay tuned. About mid-October, third week in October, where the budget will come out, and you'll get more details about what is being proposed. And hopefully it'll be the best budget that we can produce under the circumstances, which are very difficult. So thank you.
Thank you.